Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries over the Internet daily. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on listener questions when we come back. Hey, you know, here's an interesting statement. It says, "Then Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men." You'll read that revolutionary comment in Acts 5, verse 29. You know, it's a revolutionary concept, and it's impossible to put into practice unless you know the law personally yourself. Can you imagine yourself actually telling a policeman or a judge that the law of God supersedes the law of the state of Florida, California, or New York? Well, you know, there's actually three laws or three reporters or authorities that support Peter's position in Acts 5, verse 29. The First Amendment to our federal constitution is number one. Public Law 97-280 is the second. And the Supreme Court's decision in Seeger versus United States is the third. Now, do you know the scriptural law to cite in support of your position on the census or public school or Social Security or vaccinations or the many other laws of the scripture that conflict with the laws of the state? And do you know how to look it up, search it out, code plead the law to use the scripture to defend yourself against state and federal intrusions into your constitutionally protected rights? Because if you don't know the law of the scripture, and you don't know the law of the state, then you're not in any kind of position to challenge either one, are you? So if you're tired of being a biblical illiterate with the police and public officials kicking sand in your face, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Now remember, if you're online, you got a computer, you can go to our webpage, you can download that free General Law CD package direct. Just go to our webpage, turn to the appropriate page, and you can stream it or you can download it. All right, we're talking about questions that come in here to the law school every day from listeners, either by email or snail mail, or they'll call on the telephone and so on. And I cannot answer all of that mail. So I thought, well, rather than be rude and ignore you, that I would take some samples from the many requests we get. And I probably get about 30 a day. Now, there's three of us here. Three. That's me, my wife, and my boy, Dirk. Now, we've been doing this for 25 years, just the three of us. Once in a while, we might have a little help come in, wash the dishes, or do a little work around the farm here. But as a general rule, the three of us do it here. So if you're wondering why we're so slow, that's because there's just three of us doing it. Maybe you're sitting there saying, well, why don't you hire some more people to do that? Well, to hire people costs money. And I wanted to point this out to you. Did you notice that I have never asked you people for money, and I'm not asking for it now? I don't need it. I don't need any money from you. Don't send me a dime. I pay for all of this from the proceeds that come through our school. I finance the thing myself. And the reason that I do that, and sometimes people, they get a little bummed out. The reason I do that is because if somebody sent me $100,000, let's just pick out somebody for funsies over here. Let's suppose Oprah Winfrey, she's got a lot of money. And let's suppose Oprah Winfrey was listening to my program one day and said, you know, that guy Gordon sounds pretty good. I like him. She calls me on the phone and says, Mr. Gordon, would you like to have $100,000? And I said, gee, Oprah, I'd love it. And she said, well, I'm going to just cut you a check for $100,000. And by the way, here's my position on. See what our problem is? This is what the problem is with representatives and senators in the Congress and the President of the United States. Because these people take bribes. Just pure and simple, they take bribes. Now, we don't call them bribes, we call them campaign contributions. But, you know, when Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah, God love him, you know, he's a nice guy. But listen, he's a Mormon, and he works out there in Mormon country. And when the LDS Church says, hey, Mr. Hatch, we'd like you to run for the Senate, and we're going to give you $1 million, you know, when the Mormon Church says, this is what we want in the legislature, this is the law we want passed, this is what we want you to vote on, he's kind of obligated to vote the way the people who send him to Washington and give him the campaign contributions tell him to vote. So that's why the big industries like the pharmaceutical industry and the American Medical Association and so on, that's why they have so much clout with your legislators. Now, in the Bible, there's a law. There's a statute that says you shall not take a gift. It's against the law. The gift perverts the eyes of the wise. So that's why I don't take contributions. I would love it if you'd send me money. There isn't anybody that I've ever heard of, seen, or dealt with that wouldn't just love to have you send him money. That's why I don't solicit it. Because, you know, if you sent me money, then you would expect me to say what you want me to say, and I'm not going to do that. I'm going to make you just mad as hell. And I'm going to tell you what you don't want to hear. And if you don't like it, just turn the dial. See how simple that is? Just shut me up. Turn the dial. Because I don't get paid for persuading you or convincing you that I'm right and you're wrong. I don't need that. But people write letters and they want to know, well, why do you do this? This isn't the way they do it at Coca-Cola. This isn't the way Orrin Hatch does it or Ted Kennedy. And the reason is because I want to be free to be able to tell you the way I see it. This is the way it is. And Oprah Winfrey, nice lady that she is, and I'm sure that if she sent me a lot of money or somebody else sent me a lot of money, I could get on more radio stations. People want to, why don't you get on more radio stations? Why don't you get on television? Why don't you go out here and tell this story? Well, that all costs money, and when you take the money, then you got to dance the tune that they play. You know, he that has the gold makes the rules. So we finance this operation here out of our school, and we finance our radio station and our stations and our internet and all the rest of it out of our school. And then that leaves me free then to tell you what you don't want to hear. And then that's why most of you people are writing. My God, people just write me letter after letter and say, my God, you know, you make a lot of sense. Yeah, and if I took money from other people, I wouldn't make any sense at all. By the time I got through watering down what I've got to say, you people would say, well, that guy is a mealy-mouthed prostitute. He must be getting his money from the Southern Baptist Conference or somebody. And you wouldn't be far from the truth. So that's why we do it that way. Now, last time I had a letter here. Where is that letter now? And we were talking about the guy that sent the letter, and he said, "I'd like to go to the Feast of Tabernacles with you there." And I said to the guy, and I said, "Well, that's all well and good, but it's by invitation only. And the only people that come here to the Feast of Tabernacles or the Passover are the people who have either been through the Mosaic Law School or are here to go through it." Now, I got to tell you a little story. I didn't quite have enough time to finish. I had a guy call me here, and he wanted to come to the Passover. And he wanted to go to the Passover school. And I said, "Well, that's fine. That's fine." He paid his money, and he was coming to the Passover. He called me up one day, and he said, "Hey, would it be all right with you if I brought my wife?" And I said, "That's a good idea. You should bring your wife, because that'll be a big, big help to her and a big help to you. And it doesn't cost you any more." And then one day he called me up, and he said, "Now listen, my son, you know, is here living with me here at home, and could I bring him also?" And I said, "Well, go ahead and bring him, and I won't charge you for him either." One day he called me up and he said, "Now, I'd like to bring my daughter-in-law, my son's wife, daughter-in-law. Could I do that?" And I said, "Let's see, now you're going to bring your wife, you're going to bring your son, you want to bring your daughter-in-law. So that's a good idea. Go ahead and bring him. Won't charge any extra." Then one day he called me and says, "Now, can I bring my daughter-in-law's mother with me?" I said, yep, go ahead and bring him up. All right, so now we got a man and his wife, son and daughter-in-law, and the daughter-in-law's mother. And they all come up here. Now I'm going to flip over here quickly to Exodus chapter 12 here in the Bible. I'm just going to read to you a couple of lines. It's too much to read the whole chapter here. But here in Exodus chapter 12, the Eternal spoke unto Moses and Aaron. He said, "This month shall be unto you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you. Speak you unto all the congregation of Israel, saying, In the tenth day of this month they shall take of them every man a lamb according to the house of their fathers," a lamb for a house. And in verse 6 it says, "You shall keep it up until the 14th day of the same month, and the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it in the evening." That's verse 6. Now, I don't want to offend all you PETA people or all of you vegetarians out there, but I want to point out to you that here in Exodus 12, there's a requirement here that once a year at the Passover, that we take a lamb on the 10th day, bring it up, and keep it until the 14th day, and then take it out and kill it. And it goes on to tell you how to dress it, and how to prepare it, and how to cook it, and one thing and another, and how to eat it, and what to do with it. And there's quite a little story. You can read it for yourself. It's in Exodus chapter 12. Now, we do that here. We actually do that. Now, the reason that I said, "Now, all you good PETA people," see, the President of the United States, a month ago or so, he was having a news conference, or he was having an interview, and a fly was buzzing around, and the President killed the fly. Now, that was quite a trick. To kill a fly with your bare hand, it's not impossible, but it's tricky. And the President killed the fly. And, oh, my God, did you hear the flap that came down when the President killed the fly? Now, can you imagine what these people would say if they saw me kill a lamb here? And then take the blood from the lamb and sprinkle it on the doorposts and the lintels of my house? Yeah, we actually do that. Now, Christians don't do that. Pig-eating Christians do not practice the Passover. And this is not an appeal to you pig-eating Christians to get you to practice the Passover. I just wanted to point out to you that you don't do it, and you know that you don't. And I know you don't, so does everybody else. But I do. I do. And the reason I do is because there's an instruction there that tells me to do that. That's all. Just an instruction. It says, "Hey, Gordon, get off your dead ass and get out there and kill a lamb. I want you to do that once a year." And there's 53 things there in that chapter that you have to do in order to carry this out. You know, you have to have a staff in your hand when you eat it, and you got to cook it with its guts in it, and so on. So we do that. Now, here's these ladies. They come up here. There's a couple of extra ladies. Now, remember, we got a man and his wife who have bought my Mosaic Law School, and they're coming up to class. And then he asks me, well, could I bring my son? Yeah. Well, could you bring my son and daughter-in-law? Yeah. Could I bring the mother-in-law? Yeah. Go ahead. Now, they come up here. Now, we take the lamb over here at the cattle chute, and we kill it. Everybody gathers around. You know, it'll be 30, 40 people here. And I kill the lamb, and I do that so that everybody can learn how to do that, so you can see how this is done. And this lady, the mother-in-law, she puked in the driveway. She said later, she was going around to all the other people there, and she said, this is the most barbaric thing I have ever seen in my life. Now, I didn't invite this lady, and I really didn't want her here, but, you know, I didn't want to tell my student, well, you know, you can't bring her. Now, I do today. Now, today, if you want to come to my school, and you call me on the phone and say, would it be all right if I bring my son? The answer is no, you can't. Could I bring my daughter-in-law? No, you can't. Can I bring my daughter-in-law's mother? No, you can't. And why is that? Because these people can't handle this. It's way beyond Christians. They can't handle the Bible. It's too much for them. I mean, to literally carry out these laws, you can't handle that. Now I know somebody's going to write me a letter and say, don't you know all that's been abolished and done away with? No, I don't know that. That's why I'm doing it. And I'm not mad at you because you don't. I'm not trying to persuade you that you should. But I get these constant questions, you know. Why are you doing this, or what's your purpose? Let me tell you. The average Joe Sixpack Christian can't handle practicing this law. And because of that, there's no point in bringing them here. It makes them ill. They puke in my driveway. And then they badmouth me for doing this. I don't need that. I don't need you to come here and badmouth me. Hell, I got plenty of people badmouthing me without adding you to the list. No need for it. And I'm not trying to persuade you that you should do this. Now, I'm saying this to the guy that wrote me the letter and said, well, what about the Feast of Tabernacles? Well, I don't invite strangers here to the Feast of Tabernacles, only students and only serious players, because the Feast of Tabernacles is pretty heavy duty. So let me tell you a little story. I had a student come in here one day. A student been here to many of my schools, not all eight, but he had been here to four or five of them. His name was Dennis, very successful businessman. Nice guy, hell of a nice guy. He was a practicing Catholic before he came to school here. I don't know if he still is or not, but one day he came in and he said to me, he said, you know, Gordon, I was better off when I was a dumb Catholic flipping beads. And then I said, well, why do you say that? And he said, because now I'm responsible for what I know. And I said, you know, that's a pretty astute observation on your part. You know, you're right. And I said, you know, when you were a bead-flipping Catholic eating pig, you were all right. But now you know that eating pig is against the law, and you know that the Passover is a requirement, and you know and understand these laws. And if you violate these laws now, you're bumping up against the unpardonable sin. If you're ignorant, like a Chinese guy living over in Shanghai, China, and you're eating pig and monkey brains, yeah, it'll probably kill him. He'll probably end up with cancer and die, but he's not going into the lake of fire because of his ignorance. And that's Christian theology and doctrine. I understand that, but that isn't what's going to happen to this guy. He's going to come up in the second resurrection. If you want to see these resurrections, go to Revelation 20. There's three of them. But anyway, that guy's all right, but not Dennis. Not Dennis. If Dennis violates these laws, knowing that these laws are in full force and effect, you know, God is going to ask him about that. Hey, you, come here, sit down. I'm going to ask you about this. And if he doesn't have a pretty good answer, you know, it could go pretty hot and heavy on him. So it is not good for you to come here and practice or to watch the Feast of Tabernacles or the Passover or some of these laws unless you're prepared to do them. And you know, you're starting to get into areas of law here that you probably ought not to get involved in. Now, there's another little factor that comes in here. The law is written in code. And in Isaiah 28, verses 9 through 13. Get your pencil out here, boys and girls, write that down. Isaiah chapter 28, verses 9 through 13. Whom shall he teach knowledge, and whom shall he make to understand doctrine? He says, them that are weaned from the milk, weaned from the breast, and drawn from the milk. For line shall be upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little. For with stammering lips and another tongue will I speak to this people. But the word of the Eternal was unto them, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, and there a little, that they might go and fall backward and be broken and snared and taken. So the Bible is written in code so that you, the average Joe Sixpack, the average mother-in-law, the average daughter-in-law, who's not familiar with this, and you first come out here and you see me kill this lamb over here at Passover, you know, so that you might go and stumble and fall backward and be broken and snared and taken. Hey, this isn't for you. And Jesus said that up here in Matthew chapter 13. So in Matthew 13, there's a parable of the sower here. And his disciples said, why are you speaking to these people in parables? And Jesus told them, says, here's why I speak in parables. It's so that they can't understand what I'm telling them. Read it for yourself. As I say in the Blue Room, read them and weep. His disciples came and said to him, why are you speaking to these people in parables? And he said, because it's given to you to know the mystery of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it's not given. This mother-in-law and this daughter-in-law and this son ought not to have been here. It's not given to them. All we're doing here is casting pearls before swine. Nice people. I'm not here downgrading them in any way. But they don't understand what we're doing or why. They're not interested in it. Why try to persuade these people to be something that they're not? Now, he goes on to explain here in verse 14, and in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which says, by hearing you shall hear, and you shall not understand, and seeing you shall see, and you shall not perceive. This lady and her daughter saw the Passover, but they couldn't hear it, they couldn't see it, and they couldn't understand it. And so they badmouthed it. Well, hell, I don't need that. I don't need somebody coming here to the Feast of Tabernacles trying to convert these people to somebody else's religion, theology, or ideology. I don't need that. People come here because they wanted to learn what I had to teach them from the Scripture in this law school setting. If you have some other doctrine that you want to teach, go open your own school and go bring in your own students. Don't come in here and try to proselytize mine. That's my point. All right, now with that much out of the way, we have another story comes up here. The guy sent me a letter. Nice guy, I'm sure. Let me get this one over here. Yeah, right, goes right there. Another guy writes me a letter, and here's what he says. He says, now, I'm interested in your $100,000 on 25 acres, but I don't have any way to pay for it. So do you offer a program where one can work off the cost or barter? For many years, I've been very interested in owning a farm, but unfortunately, I had neither the means nor the education to begin, but I'm working toward that goal. All right, the answer is occasionally, over the years, I take a student in here and put him to work here on the farm to work off his tuition. And I did that for 25 years. So let me tell you a little story. I brought a guy in here from Kentucky last October, put him to work here, and we worked out a deal, and things are going along pretty fine. And one day he became very dissatisfied with the program, and he left. So I've modified my program now. The answer is no, I'm not going to bring you in here from the outside world to work here on the farm. And I used to do that, But what I found was is that people who come here, and I'd invite them in, are pig-eating Christians. No offense. I mean, that's just the way life is. And this guy was a musician, probably a good one, a rock and roll guy. And then he was from the Army, and he's probably a very, very nice guy. I liked him when things were going good. But here's what happens. You see, this guy does not practice the Mosaic Law, and he comes in here inside my gate. And there's a law here in the Bible that requires people that live or come inside my gate to practice the law. Now, here's a guy, he doesn't keep the Sabbath, and he's practicing rock and roll, and he's probably demon-possessed, and he's working off his school here, and I don't need that. You know what I mean? I'm an old man. I don't need it. And I don't want it. Now, this guy is a total stranger. I don't know you, Rob. I don't know what your religion is, and I don't know what your politics are. I've never met you in my life. And yeah, I could use somebody's help. I can use labor here. I could use somebody to help me build fence or to cut the grass or, you know. But I don't need the aggravation that goes with it. And so after this last experience, bringing in these people off the streets here that don't practice the law onto my farm, and they just bring a curse with them. So the answer is no, I'm not going to do that. But he made a proposition. So I thought, well, okay, let me explain this, because people oftentimes will make propositions to me, and I don't mind you doing that. I mean, you know, God love you, get after it. Make me whatever offer you want to make. But I got to tell you that I don't have room here for 10, 20, 50, or 75 people to come here and work. I might have room for one, two, or three. But my experience has been, if you have one man here, it works pretty well. If you have two men here, it doesn't work. If you have three here, it proves to be a disaster. And that's because these three guys are constantly talking. And as they're talking, they're looking to find fault. And what they're looking to find fault with is with me. And that's because I said, I practice this law. And so these guys don't, and they want desperately to find any little flaw, any little chink in my armor, which isn't all that difficult to do. And so they're just constantly, I had a woman here one time, she was up in my wife's kitchen. God just ticked my wife off something off. She's looking through the cabinets during Passover week, and she's looking for leavening. And we're moving the leavening out, and this is after the Passover, during the Days of Unleavened Bread, and she's looking for yeast in the cabinets so that she can make an accusation and say, aha, found sin in your cabinets. Well, listen, this is a big place, and I don't doubt for a minute but what you could find some yeast someplace. You know, we miss things, you know, we're not perfect. I can't get it all out, but, you know, I get most of it out. And I don't need that. And if you're looking for sin, why don't you go in the mirror and look in your own eyeballs? You'll probably find a couple of beams in there. Go look someplace else, or go look on somebody else's farm. I'm not going to invite you in here to put me under the microscope so that you can find all my sins. I don't have the time to screw around with you people doing that, and that's what I've had here in the past, and so I want to avoid that. So anyway, here's the guy's proposition. Listen to this. He says, through my extensive research, I know that the book of Revelation is not esoteric. Very few interpret the apocalypse correctly. I'm going to underline the word, very few interpret the apocalypse correctly. It's an allegory. It is metaphysical, therefore it is not literal. Does the good book not give those in power a free pass to commit their crimes because of the false interpretations of the prophecies in the book of Revelation? I don't think anyone can argue that things in the world are getting crazy, and many will say, well, it's all been foretold, therefore nothing can be done. But I believe these interpretations provide otherwise good people an excuse to do nothing because it's all been foretold by God. I know this to be nonsense. I'm going to underline that one. I know this to be nonsense, he says. Maybe I could teach a class at your school entitled The Esoteric Teachings of the Bible. I'm going to underline that. Maybe I could teach a class in your school. I mean no offense. I'm only trying to point out that though I commend you in your work and recognize your great value, I also realize that no one man can have all the answers. And so with that said, I'm very interested in what we can possibly teach each other. Okay? You want to underline that. With that said, I'm very interested in what we can possibly teach each other. And he signs off Rob. Well, now, Rob, God love you. Thank you for the offer. But no thanks. No, sir. And that's because, see, I don't believe that. For instance, you say, I know the book of Revelation is not esoteric. I don't believe that for a minute. I think that the book of Revelation means what it says and says exactly what it means. Furthermore, it's against the law to interpret it. Listen to this. Just you know, not to offend you, Rob, but the point I want to make. The scripture is of no private interpretation. The scripture is of no private interpretation. I didn't write that. I just wanted to point out to you that you'll see that in 2 Peter 1, verse 20. Knowing this first, that the prophecy of the scripture is of no private interpretation. So I'm not here to interpret the book of Revelation. It has to be code pled out, and in the last letter here, I showed you how to do that. So the code is in Isaiah 28, verses 9 through 13. And it's construed in Matthew 13, verses 10 through 17. So I want to give you an explanation. I'll show you an example of that. It's here in the book of Revelation. In Revelation 3, verse 10. Let me show you this. 3:10. It says, because you have kept the word of my patience, I also will keep you from the hour of temptation which shall come upon all the world to try them to dwell upon the earth. Now listen to this first clause. It says, because you have kept the word of my patience. What in the hell does that mean? Now, I could come along and give you George Gordon's interpretation of that. But if Peter reported from Jesus the scriptures of no private interpretation, what in the hell value does George Gordon's interpretation have? And I'd be the first one to say it doesn't have any value at all. None. Zero. Zilch. So, Rob, I think that your interpretation of Revelation, as good as it probably is worth just exactly as much as mine, which is zero. Now, over here on my shelf, I probably have 10 or 15 books that deal with the book of Revelation. You know, when I'm in the Bible bookstore, I see the amazing book of Revelation unveiled at last. And I can't help it. I buy it and I bring it home and I read this guy's take on it and one thing and another. Now, every single one of these authors is as smart as you are and as smart as I am and probably smarter than both of us put together, and they write these books, and every single one of them disagree with everybody else. There isn't a one of them over there that agrees on anything. Nothing. So, my conclusion is, now that I bought the 10 or 15 books, there isn't anybody over there that understands it. Now, Jesus comes forward here. Now, let me show you how this works. Very, very simple. In chapter 1, verse 1, it says, the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave unto him to show unto his servants things which must shortly come to pass. And he sent and signaled it by his angel unto his servant John. Now, the very first verse of this book that you say is esoteric and doesn't mean what it says, it's metaphorical, it's an allegory, you say. The very first thing here says this is a revelation of Jesus Christ. He contradicts your theory here, Rob. Now, you know, you're a nice guy, and I don't want to argue with you. I just want to tell you I disagree. You know, you're free to believe what you want, but I don't think that's correct. And I get letters from people like you that write me letters and tell me what they think, and God love you. I don't have any objection to your freedom of speech. But I don't need to bring you into my school and have you come in here to teach my students a bunch of crap that I don't believe. Why don't you go open your own school, Rob, and then teach your students whatever it is that you believe is true? Why would you want me to come into your school and teach your students a bunch of crap that you don't believe? Can two walk together except they be agreed? I don't agree with you. You're entitled to your opinion, but I don't want it here in my school. The answer is hell no. I don't want you in here teaching my students this kind of crap. All right, now let's go a step further here. In Revelation 3, verse 10, we find the word patience. Now, because you have kept the word of my patience, I also will keep you from the hour of temptation which will come upon all the world to try them that dwell upon the earth. What does this word temptation and patience mean? Those are two code words. The Bible is written in code. We saw that in Isaiah chapter 28 and then Matthew 13. Now let me show you an example of it. Let's flip over here to Revelation. Get this down, write it down. Revelation 14:12. And here is the interpretation of the word patience. Patience. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. Now let's go back here to Revelation 3:10. Let me show you something. Because you have kept the word of my patience, because you have kept the Ten Commandments, I also will keep you from the great tribulation. Now I know that the pig-eating Christians are waiting for this. They call it the rapture. Well, I'm not opposed to that. Hell, I'd love to have a rapture. A guy came in here one time, asked my wife, "Do you believe in the rapture?" She said, "Yes, I do." And he said, "Well, when do you think the rapture is going to occur?" And she said, "It occurred 2 years ago. 2 years ago." Now, boys and girls, you know, when this rapture occurs, you know, there's going to be some people, you know, 2 years after it occurs that are still going to be left here. And I'm probably going to be one of them. So I kind of figured that I probably wouldn't make the rapture. And I'm probably not good enough for that. So I'm going to have to tough it out down here. And I noticed here that Jesus said, in code, he said, "Because you have kept the word of my Ten Commandments, I also will keep you from the great tribulation." Now look up that word temptation. I'll give you here's your opportunity. Go get your concordance, Rob, and look up the word temptation and chase that out, and you're going to find a place in here where it says temptation, great tribulation. And you'll find it in Matthew chapter 24. I'll give you a little clue there. Matthew chapter 24, you'll find that temptation and great tribulation. That's the translation of temptation. That's the code. All right. Now I'm not after you here, Rob. I just wanted to tell you that you're just one of many people that write letters in here every day, and I don't have time to sit here and argue with you people and write you emails and fight with you. I just wanted to tell you, this is why I do what I do, this is the way I do it, and this is the way the game is played, and if it's offensive, turn me off. I do not have a duty to save you from the great tribulation. I don't have any duty to convince you people out there that I'm right and you are wrong. I'm a reporter. I report facts. Nothing more, nothing less. Once in a while, I give you my opinion, and here's what I think, and here's the way this game is played, and here's why I think it's played that way, and here's the documentation. Hey, I'm a little over time here. Let me give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, it's also available on our webpage. Don't ask me how to get to it now, because I don't do this computer thingy. But if you go to our webpage, and all of you computer-savvy, literate people out there should be able to find the spot on our webpage which has our radio archives. And on that radio archives thingy over there, and somebody said the other day they tried it and couldn't find it, try this. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.net, georgegordon.com. We own all three of those labels. Somebody said the other day they found it on georgegordon.com. I don't know. Don't ask me. It's beyond me. Hell, I can't turn the damn thing on, much less find anything on it. But then, that's because I'm old and I still use 3x5 cards. But you smart people out there ought to be able to find that. So you go to our webpage, and you go to the appropriate page, and you can download that free CD package, the General Law CD package. They tell me you can stream it. That is, you can just watch it right there on the thing, or you can download it on your CD, and then you can play it at your convenience. All right, now the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. In the Law Hour, an editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are answering questions that we get that are very common that come in here to the law school, and they send me a letter and they'll say, hey, how come you're doing this, or why are you doing that, or can I get this, or can I get that? And here's a letter from a guy named Chris. He's in Huntsville, Alabama. Okay, Chris, I'm 27 years old with a wife and a 6-month-old daughter, and as with most people, we're caught in the system. Though not as badly as with most people, I work for a small company as a software designer, and I work from our home. My wife and I would like to learn how to be free individuals without citizenship, without income or debt, and indeed we wish to adopt the Ten Commandment model, as it is undoubtedly the most effective. We have listened to many hours of your radio archives and are impressed with the depth and breadth of your knowledge on matters of scripture, law, and business. That's right, Chris. Just keep stroking me. Gotta love it. Now, I've been researching these matters for several years, and I find that your information is the most practical that I have seen to date. In fact, this is the first such information that I have heard of which I feel strongly has the possibility of being workable without causing legal problems for me or my family. So I underlined your clause, Chris, that says without causing legal problems for me or my family. When you get a moment, I would appreciate it if you'd send me a copy of the general law CD so I can learn more and see which classes might be of use for our continued education. Now, Chris sent me this in the form of an email, so that tells me, Chris, you have a computer. So if you can send me an email on your computer, you can download that free general law CD or stream it right there. So that'll answer that question for you. But you made this statement. You said, I feel strongly it has a possibility of being workable without causing any legal problems for me and my family. Boy, that's a mistake. Chris, I wake up here and smell the coffee. If you believe for a minute that practicing the Ten Commandment model in place of the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto is going to leave you free and freewheeling and you're just going to go smell the daisies in the meadow, you got your head up the wrong end of your anatomy. Let me show you why. This is the toughest row that you're ever going to have to hoe. This is not for the timid. So if you people out there believe that you want to leave the system and you want to join the Ten Commandment model, that's commendable. That's very wise. I think that's a good move to make. I think that it's the move that everybody needs to make. But if you think it's going to be without causing any legal problems for you or your family, boy, are you in for a surprise. You are going to have the right of your life. You're going to go to jail. You're going to have legal problems like you can't believe. Now let me show you what's happening here. Turn over here to Matthew chapter 10. Matthew 10. You don't believe me. Just get it right straight from Jesus himself. I didn't write this. Here's what Jesus said about practicing the Ten Commandment model. Starting in verse 34, he says, "Think not that I have come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword." That's quite a statement. He says, if you people down there on planet Earth think that sweet Jesus came here to bring peace, I didn't. I came to bring war. He said in verse 35, "I am come to set a man at variance against his father. I've come to set the daughter against her mother. I've come to set the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's foes shall be those of his own household. And he that loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he that loves son or daughter more than me isn't worthy of me, and he that takes not his cross and follows after me isn't worthy of me, and he that finds his life shall lose it, and he that loses his life for my sake shall find it." Chris! He that finds his life shall lose it. He that loses his life. Chris, this could get you killed. Don't you understand that? Chris, the day will come. Let me make a little prophecy here. The day will come, Chris, when you will line yourself up with others and burn me at the stake and then say to everybody there, "We have done God a service." I didn't write that. I just thought I'd point that out to you, that if you think that you're going to come practice the Ten Commandment model here without any legal problems, without any legal... Chris, do you know how many times I've been in jail? Frank Toronto was a policeman. He was a student of mine. He was a policeman up in, Providence, Rhode Island. One day, Frank said to me, he said, "Hey, Gordon, do you know how many times you've been arrested?" And I said, "No, I don't." And he said, "32. Hell, that was 25 years ago. 25 years ago, I had been arrested at that moment in time 32 times. He said, "How many times you've been convicted?" I said, "I don't know." He said, "Well, zero so far. At least that's what your record shows." Do you know that all of the 12 apostles were arrested and jailed at least once? That Jesus was arrested and executed for treason? Did you know that Elijah hid out for 3.5 years in the wilderness? That most of the prophets were hunted men? That they were hunted down like animals? They were hated and despised. Moses was hated and despised for 40 years. He had 2 friends out of 3.5 million people. 2 friends. Joshua and Caleb. That's it. So if you think, if you think that you're gonna go through this program over here kind of like, like Alice in Wonderland, I think you're in for a big surprise. Now, I like to get a letter every once in a while that tells me what a nice guy I am. That makes me feel good. I'm not telling you about all the letters that tell me what a dirty horse's patootie I am. I am not well-liked, and I'm not liked in my community. The government doesn't like me. Homeland Security has me on their list. I can't fly on an airplane, Chris. What is it that I've done? I've expatriated my citizenship pursuant to Revelation 18:4. I practice the Passover pursuant to Exodus 12. I practice the Ten Commandments pursuant to Exodus 20. I'm hated and despised. I'm reviled by everybody. Even my own children despise me. They hate me. I got one daughter that has a civil word to say about me, but I'm not sure she cares all that much for me. And the rest of them have nothing but evil, vindictive hatred for me. And that's my children. Okay? And then the rest of you people out there come in behind them. So I just thought I'd share that with you. Now let me show you one more little statement here. It's in Matthew chapter 10, starting in verse 16. He says, "Behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. Be you therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves." So first of all, Chris, you need to be as wise as a snake. Wake up and smell the coffee. Count the cost before you get involved in this deal. Because once the cards are dealt and your money's in the pot, you're in. Don't put your hand to the plow and then start looking back. And if you think you're going to look back, then don't put your hands to the plow. In verse 17 he says, "But beware of men, because they're going to deliver you up to the councils, and they will scourge you in their synagogues. And you shall be brought before governors and kings for my sake, for a testimony against them and the Gentiles." Chris, when you resign your social security number, expatriate your citizenship, and resign your driver's license, you are going to be brought before judges and prosecutors. And they will despise you and revile you, and they will prosecute you and jail you. First thing I tell a student when he comes in the door, if you can't go to jail, you can't do this. I was in jail one time up in Texas County, and then some little fat lady came in, you know, one of these Tinkerbell types, you know. Ain't nothing like a fat lady on high heels. And I happened to have an envelope in my hand, and I said, Hey, lady, would you take this letter and give it to the sheriff for me? Why, that woman almost had a heart attack. She stopped, she backed up, she was walking down the hallway in front of the cell, and she moved to the other side, ignored me, and then went on with the rest of the people. She was there with some church group there to visit prisoners. I was in solitary confinement. And I was in jail because I didn't have a driver's license. Why don't I have a driver's license? Because a driver's license is idolatry. It's against the law to make a contract with Baal, and that's a contract. There's four statutes that tell you not to do that. Chris, wake up. If you practice the Ten Commandment model, you're going to jail. And that's why you need to count the cost before you get involved in this. If you believe that this is a good program here and they're going to keep you out of legal problems, it won't. Verse 18, you shall be brought before governors and kings for my sake, for a testimony against them and the Gentiles. But when they deliver you up, take no thought how or what you shall speak, for it shall be given you in that same hour what you shall speak, because it's not you that speak, but the Spirit of your Father that speaks in you. And the brother shall deliver up the brother to death, and the father the child, and the children shall rise up against their parents and cause them to be put to death. Your children will rise up and report you to FEMA. They will report you to their school teachers and report on you what you're doing. And you shall be hated of all men for my name's sake, but he that endures to the end shall be saved. And Chris, you're going to be hated. You practice the Ten Commandments and you're going to be hated by everybody. And take it from me, I can tell you that right now. Now, it is true that every once in a while somebody sends me a nice letter and they say, Mr. Gordon, I really like you. You walk on water. The truth is, I don't walk on water, but the other side of the coin is that this isn't all a bed of roses either. So just a word to the wise there, just in case you thought that this is going to be the answer to all your problems so that you can live a life of a common law free man. That period is past now. Yeah, I got one more little story here I got to tell you. I got about 3 minutes here. Listen to this. Cheating at the gas pumps is going on. Print out your receipts. The pump should have totaled $68 and change when the receipt was printed, and she checked and it was $77 and change. So she got mad and went inside the store and asked for a calculator and then let them do the math. They refunded her money. So she told them that if they cheat, they had better make it right. Now, normally her husband would skip printing the receipt, but not her. We saw on the news the other night that this is happening everywhere. Brian pumped exactly 1 gallon of gas. The price did not match the cost of 1 gallon. It was higher. So he went inside and complained, and he got a refund. There's also a number on each pump that you can call and complain. This is a true story, so read it carefully. On April 24th, 2008, I stopped at a BP gas station in Georgia. My truck's gas gauge was on a quarter of a tank. I used the mid-grade, which was priced at $3.71 a gallon. When my tank is at this point, it takes around 14 gallons to fill it up. When the pump showed 14 gallons had been pumped, I began to slow it down. Then, to my surprise, it went to 15 gallons, then 16. I even looked under my truck to see if it was being spilled, but it wasn't. Then it showed 17 gallons on the pump. It stopped at 18 gallons. This was very strange to me, since my truck is only an 18-gallon tank, so I went on my way a little confused. Then on the evening news, I heard a report that 1 out of 4 gas stations had calibrated their pumps to show more gas had been pumped than the person actually got. So here is how I check a pump to see if you're getting the right amount. Whichever grade you're using, put exactly 10 gallons in your tank, then look at the dollar amount, and if the dollar amount is not exactly 10 times the price of the fuel that you've chosen, then the pumps are rigged. In my case, as I said, the mid-grade was $3.71 9/10 per gallon. My dollar amount for 10 gallons should have been $37.19. I wish I'd checked the pump. It doesn't matter where you pump the gas. So check the 10-gallon price. If you do find a station that's cheating, contact the State Agriculture Department and direct your comments to the commissioner. The info is on the gas pumps. So please don't delete this until you've sent it to all of your people in your address book. We need to put a stop to this outrageous cheating of customers. The gas companies are raking off profits, and they're illegal. Now that's 1 out of 4. This came from Namelia, by the way. Namela. So why don't you check that out? Just pump 10 gallons and see if that's the correct price. Just thought I'd pass that one on to you. Hey, I'm running out of time here, so let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and all of these law hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the law hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.